This message is supported by Boehringer Ingelheim, the maker of NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel Chewable Tablets. Next level dog owners will do anything for their pets, especially when it comes to their well-being. And that means giving them next level protection from parasites with NexGard Plus Chews. NexGard Plus Chews provide one and done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're designed to be easy to give in a tasty, beef-flavored soft chew. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventative. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus Chews.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Market Musings Podcast. Well, welcome back to the Market Musings Podcast here from Stopbox, where today I'm joined by co-host Dan Flynn and our special guest today, Klaus Eckhoff, the chairman of Rome Resources. So welcome both. How are you doing? Dan, first of all, everything good with you?
Yeah, all good. Busy time on the markets and everything, but keeping up with it, I think.
Indeed. I think there's a lot of opportunities in the market at the moment with valuations as they are. But it's good to be speaking to Klaus today, of course, Tinplay, of course, with Rome Resources in the DRC. But Klaus, thank you for joining us. How are you doing?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Thank you for organizing that for me. So that's very welcome. I'm good.
Good. I know we've spoken once before, I think. It was before your role progressed to chairman of Rome Resources here. And we do want to talk a lot about Rome Resources, Tin, and of course, your previous experience in the DRC, of course, with Alphamin. But just to start us off, it'd be nice to get a bit of a history of where you've sort of come from, really. I know you've spent sort of best part of 20 years as a geologist. So, you know, you can go back as far as you like, but maybe, you know, what you sort of studied at university, if you always had an interest in rocks, for example, and really sort of your sort of early, entry into this space. So, where did it all sort of start?
Yeah, I started on the technical university in Munich, studied geology there, and just did my master's and Greenland, actually, which is now on the hot map everywhere suddenly again. And after that, I migrated straight away to Australia and joined a gold exploration company. And we had some success there, found a deposit, and sold that to Teck Corporation. After that, I moved on to list various companies operating in Australia and in the Philippines, Asia, and in Africa too, in West Africa, mainly West Africa initially. There we found quite a few deposits too, which we sold off to Resolute, which is still existing in Australia. And then in Tanzania, we had another project there, which we sold off to Gallery Gold and Eon Gold. So yeah, from the history point of view, it was always, you know, that we came in, found some deposits, and then we either sold them off or they went into production at one point in time with a different management.
Okay. And is that what, would you say that's your sort of style of operation, sort of coming?
Yeah.
Okay. Rather than sort of a career geologist going around different companies doing geology, you like that more kind of project building, selling them on, joint venturing, doing what you can do to see that early stage value, but then eventually moving it on.
Yeah, basically scorching the planet and looking around which areas are very prospective and where you can find something which might have world-class potential. And When I was working in Tanzania, I looked at the northern part of DRC in 1998, which was a very volatile period for the Congo at that point in time, with Kabila Senior still in power there. These projects interested me already way, way before the Moto Gold Mines area. But I couldn't raise any money, so I let that dormant there and then came back in 2002, 2003 and raised some money. And then we found 20 million ounces there within 4 years. And that was then sold off later to Rand Gold. And now, as everybody knows, Rand Gold was then merged with Barrick. Yeah. And Kibale is probably one of the biggest stories still for Barrick and also for Africa in particular. It's highly profitable. It's in the northern part of the DRC. It's very famous now. Okay. After that, we looked around, you know, what other projects are available. We had a look at a few gold projects, but 1, 2, 3, 4 million ounces ones, but they were too small. So we didn't do anything there. And in 2012, we looked at BC, which is now Alphamin, and we acquired that one. And in 2014, we listed that one in Canada. Again, the tin market crashed then. We had some issues to raise capital, and then we found an American firm or South African-American firm. They put in $15 million and took more or less the company over. They had a 40% stake. Put in their own management, and the geological team stayed the same, which was Mark Gessen, who is now executive director of Rome, and then Jamie, who is the exploration manager for us also in Rome Resources. And they basically drove it up to pre-feasibility and then left, you know, when banking feasibility started and everything we got went into production.
Okay, so I mean,
we were quite actively involved in that project for quite a long time.
Okay, and is it? Do you have a particular commodity that you sort of like, or is tin sort of favorite amongst you?
Well, I mean, tin is a difficult sector, you know, because it's a very small sole market for tin only. Mm-hmm. So major won't be interested, but because of the grade, which is the biggest the highest grade in the world, it's certainly of interest, and we could see it's highly profitable even at $12,000 or $13,000 US, while everybody else around the planet at $12,000 closes everything. So there is not much mines who would survive at these levels. So you could see it also in the tin price. If there is economic disaster or whatever, it crashes down to 14 or 13,000. But there's nobody there producing anymore other than Alphamin today. So it's a floor for tin, I guess. Yeah.
So yeah. Go on, Dan.
I was going to say, a lot of the projects you've worked on throughout your career have been based in the DRC. I think a lot of viewers will have a lot of perceptions of the DRC based on what they're seeing in the news. Could you perhaps tell us a little bit about what sort of leads you to keep coming back to the country and the opportunity you see on the ground there?
Well, for me, because I'm a geologist, so I just look at the geological risk rather than the political risk. And the geological risk is very little. While in Australia, I mean, if you look at spent every year on exploration and what comes out there is nothing. I mean, if you're lucky, you find 300,000 ounces or so. And the country has spent $12 billion every year on gold exploration. So it's a high risk game there. And then you have 2,800 companies competing for the same turf. You go to the DRC, there's nobody there, not even one junior. I mean, if there's a big boom, then suddenly there's maybe two or three Canadian companies or a couple of Australian companies coming in. But the learning curve is too expensive and too long. And they usually leave, you know, once the boom is over, they can't raise any more money and they leave.
Okay.
Definitely. Does that mean that there's perhaps a lot of untapped potential from here, perhaps with older mines that haven't been subject to modern exploration techniques, etc.?
That's the advantage there too. You don't need to come with geophysics. I mean, if I have to start with geophysics in the DRC, then I already that's too hard for me. So usually I just look at the rocks or the locations, if there's some artisanal activities, and look at the strike lengths and the widths of the mineralization there, and then you have a target. You have very quickly a drilling target there. Okay. And that's really what I like. And then usually when you drill it, you will get something there. The question always is naturally, you know, is it going to be world-class or is it just going to be a normal deposit?
Okay. Why is the DRC so good for tin? Is it just nature?
Yeah, it's nature. Yeah. I mean, the southern part, I mean, if you look at Katanga, it's a copper belt. I mean, where in the world you get 4 or 5% copper? I mean, and 1% cobalt. I mean, in Australia, everybody's happy if you have 0.1 or 0.2%. And the same everywhere else too. So it's very well endowed. It's not only one deposit. I mean, even if you look at the zinc deposit from Friedland, 28%, 35% average. I mean, anywhere else, you high-grade mine would be 6% or 5%.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's everywhere in the DRC. Just depends on what you're looking for. The commodities, the base metals are in the south and on the southeastern part. And then in the northern part, you go to gold ones.
Okay. And you say there's not many operators in the DRC for tin, and some people come in when the price is spiking but then don't really last out through the cycle.
Yeah, you have some up in the higher areas, the Maniema areas, so you have quite a few alluvial deposits there. There's some operators on and off there, but that's far in between. You know? I mean, if the price goes up to 30,000-40,000, then there will be a bit more activity. But if it goes down to 15 or 20, it will stop immediately. It's just not viable then.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the tin price today is what around?
Around 30,000, the tin price.
30, okay.
I think there will be not a huge drop there. I mean, and as I know in the UK and also in Australia, they open a few mines there, but they're 0.1 or 0.2%. So they're deep down, so the underground mines. And in Morocco too, I mean, that mine opens and closes every 5 or 10 years, depending on what the market is like. So they're not really, they are continuously there.
Okay. Mm. Yeah.
And can we go into a bit more of a deep dive into the tin market itself? I mean, can you tell us about what it's used in and what perhaps the demand outlook is like against supply?
Yeah, I mean, if you look around, you know, the major, what do you call it, deliveries came usually out of Indonesia and Myanmar and then out of Malaysia. But they were all usually alluvials rather than hard rock deposits. And the grades are going down there naturally too. So if you continuously mine your alluvials, you just take the higher grades and then later on you just go to lower and lower, lower grades every year. So it's not that feasible anymore either there, you know, at these prices. If the prices go down to 10,000-12,000 US, Indonesia won't produce much anymore. Or for the fact, you know, Myanmar has other issues too, so that nobody produces anything at the moment anyway. So it's a very small market, the tin market.
Okay. And I mean, to operate in the DRC then, I mean, or to be successful as a tin explorer, indeed producer in the DRC, what do you think it takes? You've had a success there with Alphamin, and you're presumably trying to replicate that with Rome. What do you think the key is?
Well, the grade is the key, and then naturally the size of the deposit too. So, I mean, if you look, you know, the southern part of Alphamin, that's around 2% at the moment, but the top 500 meters is only 0.2. Sorry. And the 0.2 grams go for 400 or 500 meters, and then you have to go underground there.
Okay.
I mean, everything they mining is underground at the moment. So the location also is not that bad because, you could argue, you know, with M23, which is currently floating around to the north, it's close to the border, so you have access to other markets very quickly. So the infrastructure is not too bad. considering.
Yeah, okay. And from what I understand, Rome's ground is effectively, it's adjacent to the Alfheim ground, so it's almost an extension of that mineralization. And a lot of the the saying in the mining sector is timing is everything. You know, you can have something, but if you get the timing wrong and the commodity price is not there, then you won't make it a success, but maybe subsequent companies will. So I'm quite keen to sort of understand your journey, if you like, from Alfheim to then effectively stepping back off of Alfheim, maybe taking some time out, I don't know, trying to time the sector and then going again with Rome. Is that your sort of thinking? Are you sort of timing the market here? And
We just try, and what we are trying to work on at the moment is to get one intercept comparable to BC at depth. I mean, we're lucky that actually the top 200 meters is already mineralized, so which hasn't been the case in the BC deposit. We had to drill 400-500 meters deep, and that was a different ballgame there. And initially, the first 3-4 months, we'd never had any luck with any intercepts whatsoever. So we got plenty of targets there because the system is very large. So it's close to the granodiorite, which hosts the BC one, which is a source of tin for the BC deposit. We pretty much at the same position. We think even that the position is better because you have a flexure to the north where the structures turn around to the south to the northwest. And that opened up the area a lot better for us from a fluid point of view. That's why you have also suddenly 30, 40, 50 meter intercept of copper there at 3%. At BC, you didn't have much copper. You were a lot lower in the system, so the temperature was higher for the tin generation there, which we have at Kalai. I would argue it's pretty much the same. So we're just drilling a deep hole at Kalai, underneath of the lower grade intercept initially there. And we're pretty confident that the model will hold, that with steps everything increases, the grades increase. at Monte Argoma, we're pretty much convinced also that the mineralization at depths there will change slowly into more tin rather than copper and zinc. And the indications are that that will be the case.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. And BC, when you say BC, you want to find something comparable to BC. Just what is BC?
That's what the deposit was called initially, BC. That's renamed all those. It was Empalma South and Empalma North, etc. Et
right. Okay.
But the higher grade ones was initially called BC.
Okay.
That's why we called also our project BC North. And the high grade area that was. You could have an intercept there even at 10-12% tin. But very skinny, also pinching and swelling. So you couldn't guarantee when you drill there that you're going to intercept it. Or you have a large intercept or a very skinny intercept. But over time, you know, the model basically was also, we delivered a model which worked. And then we were able to work out the resources there.
Okay.
Yeah. So you've been delivering some pretty strong tin grades, like you mentioned, from BC North recently. Can you talk us through what some of the next steps investors can expect to see from the project?
We're pretty close to receive several holds. We had some issues there with the logistics because I don't know if you follow it exactly, you know, but we had to relocate from Goma to Kisangani. Just to keep the logistics going in and out of our project, because there were some disturbances in Goma, and then the airport was. I'm pretty confident it might change soon again, because it has already been a more peaceful direction, as far as I heard on the ground. So once that is done, then we go back to Goma or Bukavu. Just to be safe, we moved to Kisangani for the time being. Problem with Kisangani is they only have 2 or 3 flights to Kinshasa a week. Sometimes they get cancelled. So you have a hole in your logistics there. And we need the logistics to work properly, you know, because we need to get the samples out. We need to get to Lumbumbashi, et cetera, et cetera, and support. for the drill rigs. So everything depends on these logistics and supply chains.
Yeah, okay. So that basically the core is being, trucked from site to to an airport and then going to Lubumbashi for the assaying. Yeah, yep. Okay. And another political situation was, I know you said you focus on the rocks and not the politics, but I mean, you say that it's perhaps the issues there at the moment are looking like they're being resolved.
I'm pretty confident at one stage it will be resolved again in the near future. I mean, it has always been there. I mean, M23 has always been in the northern part of South Kivu. So it's not like it's brand new. It's over the last 15, 20 years, it has always been there. I mean, most of the operations which I had, I mean, even AVZ Minerals, the lithium deposit, has never been subject to any problems. And also Moto up in the northern part, we never seen any rebels coming into those locations anyway. And then the problem is the press and comes out of his Reuters saying, you know, that M23 is marching towards Kinsangani. I mean, if you look at the map, it's 2,000 kilometers of jungle with no infrastructure. Mm. There'll be 8 months or 12 months before they arrive. You know? So it's virtually impossible, you know. But, you know, I mean, I'm just here in Vienna. Some people ask me about that too, you know. The problem is they don't know.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't it? We don't really know what happens. So it's very different on the ground than what is sort of sometimes reported than what we see. So at the moment, then you're drilling to find mineralization comparable to effectively what Alphamin have on their ground. So I mean, what are the early signs looking like? How confident are you feeling that you can replicate effectively what you did before?
Yeah, I mean, we're very confident. I think, you know, the only issue is that we couldn't deliver everything very quickly. Is the supply chain, logistics, always some issues here, paperwork required, et cetera, et cetera. But otherwise, we get everything what we thought we're going to get. Okay. Grades are getting bigger with steps. We get every time we drill a hole. I think we had only one hole where there was nothing in it.
Okay.
You know, so where else you're going to get that? Usually you get all the holes with nothing in it and you might have one where in summary, we're pretty happy. I mean, okay, we could have been a bit more lucky. You know, we had already the high-grade intercept at 200 or 250 meters, but so far we haven't, but it could happen any day.
Okay. And you're heading out there, aren't you, I think, tomorrow indeed?
Yeah, I go to Kinshasa. I have a few meetings there.
Okay.
And then we'll also probably discuss also the situation with 23 and what the progress is. So I know a few people there who are quite involved.
Okay. Will you be going to the camp or not on this trip?
No, not on this trip.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
The problem there is, you know, I've got to go to Boulogne, for example, and that's only valid for 7 days. So if you fly to Kisangani and then they cancel the flight, then you're suddenly illegal.
Yeah, and that's a small problem. Yeah.
And to get out of the DRC, that's not that easy then. And every customer offers up, they won't like you.
Yeah, no, that's not ideal. No. Okay. No. Well, I hope the trip goes well. I hope the meetings go well. What sort of the drilling just continues effectively, I guess, for Rome. That's really what it's all about.
Yep. We're drilling currently under Kalai. That's looking good. Should be close to a zone there again. It's all progressing as good as could be. You know. So supply chain issues. For example, one of the drill holes is sitting in Goma and we can't get it out at the moment because there's nobody there who will sign off the paperwork, for example, to get on the plane. So there's these little things there which are big for us, because if you another 2 weeks later when we get the SS out, then it's another 2 weeks before they're actually ready, etc., etc. So that is a problem.
Yeah, but there's not much you can do about that, though, really, I guess, except...
No, we can't. There's nothing we can do about it. No.
Yeah, okay. And what's the sort of main objective coming out of this? Does the drilling program have an end? Are you looking to then sort of define something from the drilling program? Or what?
No, I think, you know, hopefully, you know, we continue to get the numbers we expect, and then we will continue. You know, we'll continue further.
Just continue proving it up,
Yeah. And then come out with the early resource. I mean, maybe we still can make it by the end of the first quarter. So that's the target, you know, to give the market an indication of what the size could be on the top part of the top 200 okay. meters, 200, 300 meters, which are all on ridges. So they'll be all open cut, you know, so there will be no underground required at that point in time.
Okay. Yeah. And perhaps looking a bit more longer term, is Rome's focus going to remain on BC North exclusively, or are you interested in adding any other projects to the portfolio?
Yeah, the licenses to the north and to the east, we working on it already a little bit, looking at it, but we haven't signed any deals at this point in time. We don't want to distract the market, you know, with major acquisitions surrounding the area. Then people might think, oh, maybe that's not that good what they have, you know. But we're trying to keep that all in firm hands with us. We know all the people there, so that's certainly coming too at one point in time.
Great.
Interesting. Okay. And you're a particularly large shareholder, I think, as well, of Rome as well. So you're backing it putting your money where your mouth is. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. Okay. So the ultimate end goal, what would it be? Would it be effectively a buyout? What was similar to Alphamin? Are we looking at a similar conclusion?
Yeah. When was it? Not long ago, just before Christmas, I was in Paris for a couple of days. I mean, there's some Chinese invested in it, but I think, you know, it's early days. You know, we don't have to sell anything. We raised the money, we got the backing there, so we don't need to sell today, you know. So we want to add some big value on it. Okay. I mean, if we get one big intercept at depth which confirms the great increases there, then it can double and triple very quickly.
Okay. So it's really just about continuing to drill, continuing to prove up effectively. Yeah. Good old fashioned. Yeah. Drilling out basically.
Yeah, and what I heard too is that the Saudis are looking at buying a big stake in Alphamin, taking out at Denham, I guess. You know, that's
interesting
because I mean they've been in there since now 10 years. You know, so for them, you know, it's time to move on. They're a bit unlucky too. You know, you saw their share price collapsed also 30, 40 cents within a day. But they have, everything is normal for them too. They haven't had any issues there, but it just gets affected. You know?
Yeah, indeed. The Saudis, interesting, because I know that the Saudis are really making some serious moves in the mining space, not just internally, but looking for external opportunities as well.
Yeah, initially, I mean, I'd say 4 or 5 years ago, I met a few of them, you know, but they don't understand exploration. So they're looking only for something which is in production or has a bankable feasibility where they can build the plant themselves. I mean, it's no point for them. They don't put $2 million or $3 million into a greenfield exploration play. That's not their game. Because the northern part, they looked at that one and they couldn't find anything there because it hasn't been explored over the last 10 years again.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. Okay, well, that's good. So you won't get to site this time, but I know you've been to site. I know Paul has been to site recently. Mark as well, of course, you worked with Mark in the past. We got a bit of a...
Yeah, Mark was scheduled to go, but he also cancelled it because of the flights to Kisangani and out of Kisangani being not very trustworthy.
Okay, yeah. But what's it like sort of working with like the old team sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I worked with Mark since more than a quarter of a century now.
So. Sure.
I mean, in the Tanzania days, he was working with me there even before we get taken out from Gallery Gold. So, yeah, and on and off, we worked everywhere in DRC and in other countries and also in South America, in Russia, everywhere.
Okay, yeah. And the camp itself, what's it like sort of on the ground there sort of to live and work on a daily basis? Is it quite a hospitable or inhospitable environment?
No, it's not too bad. I mean, we built a proper camp there, so it's a typical exploration camp.
Okay.
And the locals which are working for us there, they lived there before or worked as artisanals.
Okay.
So Jamie himself, I mean, he has a wife and children in Lubumbashi. So for him, it's just on the other side of the DRC where he goes for work.
Okay, okay. No, yeah, it looks like a nice setup there from the videos we saw from Paul there. So, well, that's good. Thank you, Klaus. It's nice to sort of hear a little bit about where you've come and what you want to achieve effectively at Alphamin. And really, to sum it up, I suppose you basically want to replicate the success that you saw before, prove it up, prove the mineralization there, prove the deposit,
yep,
and attract that attention that you know when it's due.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And if it takes another year, so be it. You know, so it's,
sure.
I mean, it's very quick then anyway. I mean, if you look around, you know, and some other companies are working 20, 30 years to find something.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. No, a year in mining exploration is rapid. Excellent. Well, Dan, unless you've got any other questions for Klaus.
No, that's great. That's really interesting. Thanks, Klaus.
Well, thank you very much, Klaus. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll speak again soon.
Yeah, we do. Thanks for your time and for organizing it. And speak soon.
Thank you.